Welcome to the Working Dog Depot podcast with your hosts, Rich Harden and Howard Young.
All right. How's it going, Howard Young? How are you, sir?
Very good, buddy. How about you?
Doing well. Beautiful day here in the state of Kentucky.
But great.
You're at Hits, right?
I am at Hits.
I did not get to go to Hits. I'm very disappointed about that this year. I really wanted to make it out there.
Well, maybe next year.
Well, it goes just like I say all the time, that Howard Young has this cool dog job where he has no dogs. I, on the other hand, have a company that has plenty of dogs. So I'm still trying to replicate the model here
someday.
How I can have a dog business with no dogs. I don't know. I don't get it.
It's a special thing.
It is.
So we're in Scottsdale, Arizona, where this afternoon it says it is 106 degrees.
Okay. Well, I hope you get a sunburn.
Yeah, I did. First day, right on the shoulders. Yep. First day. Nice. So I've got two gentlemen with me today that are attending the conference, and I would like for them to introduce themselves, and we'll kind of dive right into their stories and talk dogs.
Awesome.
My name's Brian Hempelman. I'm a sergeant in the Denver metro area, just northwest of Denver a little bit. Department about 180 officers. We border Denver, so we get to play with all that stuff that comes out of at old Denver. But been in law enforcement for about 29 years, doing dog stuff for 27. Currently on my fifth dog, who's an explosive dual-trained patrol guy. We have four dogs right now. We lost one right around COVID time, and due to the manpower stuff and all that, we ended up not just filling that spot back up, but we're usually around five dogs. Pretty busy area. I'm also done some stuff for the DOD and TISWIG and stuff like that with some great trainers around the country on specific projects for end users. And it's been a good time. A lot of dog stuff, having a good time doing it, but here to learn some more.
Nice. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And I'm Billy Sawyer. I'm also in the north of the Denver metro area. I'm a supervisor of our unit, and we're currently sitting at five dogs. We were a two-dog unit forever, and recently we added two, and then I just added another one, which put us at five. We're supposed to be adding two more next year to put us at seven.
Wow.
So we're growing. We're growing fast. It's good because it's keeping our officers safe, but I started my law enforcement career in Jacksonville, Florida, with the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. Didn't do dogs down there, but I had a good mentor that did, and he's the one who kind of started pushing me in that direction. Moved out to Colorado 11 years ago and got into the dog world, met Brian, and everything went from there. And then a few years ago, we got together and decided to start a company together called Bellator Canine. And we're doing a little bit of everything. We've got some labs that we're training up, selling. We've got... We do some tactic stuff, some street readiness seminars, things like that.
Nice. Well, welcome to the show, man. It's very nice to meet you.
Yes, sir. Nice to meet you.
I always like to ask the introductory question of what got you into the dog world? What brought you in that direction?
Well, for me, it was kind of that old story. I always wanted to be a cop when I was young, forever. So one day we was at a school, I think it was an elementary school, and saw some dogs training, and got the officers were cool and kind of let me tag along and stuff like that, and got to watch what they were doing. And they were just doing building searches and some motor work, and thought it was the coolest thing on the planet. So that kind of geared me towards, I already had the wanting to be a cop kind of thing. So, and it's like, you know what? I want to do dog stuff. So we started, I was with the department, and we did not have a canine unit. I had a pet shepherd that we went out and we just tried training, and he was completely worthless, but we thought he was the coolest thing on earth. So we did some training with an agency local next to him, and started kind of mentioning it to the chief. And next thing we knew, the chief's like, nah, I think we're going to start a unit. So ended up getting selected with another gentleman back in 97 and kind of started the career from there.
Nice. Very cool.
Well, my love for the canine unit started with actually a few dog calls, and I wasn't the guy that would, I mean, I'd go chase people. I love chasing, foot pursuit's fun to me, but when I'd set a perimeter and I knew I had them in there and I called the dog and I got to watch a few dogs, even a couple of them on their very first apprehension, immediately I was like, okay, I could do this. But instead I went undercover narcotics route for a little while, And then I was thinking about leaving. One of my lieutenants was trying to get me to stay. And he goes, what do you want to do? I said, I want to go to the canine unit. He's like, no, I want you to stay here. I said, well, I ended up just leaving the state entirely, which if you've seen what's happened to Colorado, maybe I should have just stayed in Florida. But went out to Colorado, and the first thing I did was get with the canine unit guys and start working with them. Went to Franco Angelini's decoy course that I used to do. I wish he was still doing. I love that guy. I've been to his course or helped him kind of teach. He'd just allow me, not like I had anything to give compared to him, but he would allow me just to help teach me, but allow me to teach his course with him a little bit, along with another guy, two other guys in our area that are also here at HITS.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Becklider.
Well, that's a pretty good mentorship right there. That's not bad.
It's awesome. That guy's, he's just amazing to me. But so I started decoyed for 2 years, pretty much for free every week, and got beat up pretty bad. And I loved it. It made me really learn dog behavior. And it's funny because as a decoy, you really know the dogs better than the handlers, especially with what they're doing, scenarios they're going through and stuff. But finally got on the unit and kind of went from there.
Very cool. Very cool.
So one of the things that I've known of Billy for a while, and I saw him fill in on it with a workshop a couple of years ago, but one of the things that caught my eye recently was a video that he had posted on the LEO discussion page, and he was doing recalls, and he was doing it in a fashion that is very similar to the way I teach it, which is kind of, obviously it caught my attention because I started doing downing recalls a number of years ago, simply because it seemed to make the most sense to me, because I had become very accustomed to seeing dogs that would run out and they would be recalled and they would take this big wide loop and they may pee on the tree over there on their way back. It always made sense to me that if we had a solid down and you could down a dog wherever he was doing whatever he was doing, that to me that made the most sense in a recall. So what we would do is we would send the dog out and typically it would be a short distance, so we would down him. And what that does for folks that don't know is that that's lining the dog up with whatever he is pursuing. And the dog is never really taking his eyes off of it unless you want to call him back, which that's not a big issue, is once he's in a down to call him back. Everything is all lined up in a straight line. You know, if the situation changes, if you want to send him from the down, he can go from the down. It just seemed to make so much sense to me. So when I saw his video and the way they were doing it, I thought, hey, that's pretty slick. I like the way they're doing it. They're bringing, and he can describe that. I'd love for him to describe that. Just a little bit different than the way I do it, and it seemed to make sense. But I think what he'll probably stress is that the dog has to have a very good, solid down stay in order to accomplish what you're accomplishing. But I don't know if you want to kind of talk your way through that, because I know those are the kind of things that guys want to hear, is that maybe there's another way to do this that makes sense, and go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you just said, because it's as many tools as we can put in our toolbox, the better, which is why we're here. We're at HITS trying to learn. And there's been a few guys that I picked up a few things here and there from each class that we've been to. And that's how we got to where we're at. And of course, everything doesn't work for every dog. So you got to have a lot of different tools to, mm-hmm. to get that dog to where you need him to be. But
now, come on, it does on Instagram.
just ask them. They'll tell you, right? Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
No, I guess where it starts for us is we get a dog. I do a lot of pre-training with them. I don't give them the handlers right away. So they're with me for a few months. I try to get them, honestly, especially for a new handler, almost finished. But that doesn't always happen with timing, with our manpower and trying to get people to academies and stuff. But we also don't rush things. So if they're not ready, they're not ready. But so with e-collar, we start with an e-collar. And I'll put a dog on an e-collar day one. And when I'm out there throwing a ball with them, I start doing E and I start stemming them away from me immediately. So it's always go away, go away, go away, go away. That way, when I do get to the point where I'm correcting them, I don't want their default to be come back to dad's heel.
Right.
I want them to just understand that it could be anything else. And it might be go away. It might be down where you're at. It might be come back to me. It might be go a different direction. So I hate the default, and I've had that with a dog.
Oh, we have too.
Yeah. So I've had that.
And we do it to everything, right? We do it to his food bowl. We do it to his ball. We do it to getting in the car. So yep. Everything.
Awesome.
you name it. And we're just constantly like, here's the E, super low. We're not frying them. We're just, you know, very low E, enough for them to feel it and go do this and go do that. And it seems to work out for us, which then turns into with our down halfways and the recalls and stuff. We kind of mix it up pretty fast once the dogs are getting it. Some of our biggest things is, so we'll throw a long line on a harness, not a pinch, not a flat collar or anything like that. We want the pressure coming from somewhere else because all it is to slow the dog down. But we already have it down, like you just said. We've got a stable down. We've already taught the dog how to lay down and stay there. And once we have that, we'll throw a toy out there. And this is where the down kind of takes a minute at first because they're in drive. So they get out to the end of the leash. We decide where we're going to down them. You know, we give them a couple seconds to try to make the decision on their own. Really, it's about 1/1000. And then we're stopping that leash. And then we don't say anything else. I don't like repeating commands. So it's one command and then that's it. So we need you paying attention to us. Even though sometimes they, I think, who was it? Justin Rigney said today, you know, auditory exclusion, they get it. I've seen it. So sometimes I'm like, all right, say it again. They didn't hear you. You could tell no body language change or anything like that. So we'll start tapping them on that low E. And to them at first, it's like, well, that means go away from me. So you'll see them kind of start to go instead of trying to come back to you. And then they're like, wait a minute. And they try something new. So we'll just wait them out. I'd rather them make the decision than me force them to make the decision. And then once they lay down, we immediately release it with the marker word, which we've also been charging this entire time. So they understand we generally use YES. Yes.
Yeah, we do too.
It's funny. I spell it because I spell it.
Don't let the dog hear it.
I don't want my dog to hear it because he starts trying to break and come get it, but he's not even with me. So we use yes. And so we've got them on long line. They break and we just rep that out. And then all of a sudden, when they're getting really good at that, we throw some like a wrench in it and they'll down. They think they're going to go get it. And we have another ball back here and we recall them back to us. And at first we're just taking that ball, swinging it with the heel command or here command. And we're just getting them flying back to us as fast as they can. We throw the ball so that they're running all the way past us instead of slowing down near us. Cause we want that as fast as we can get it back to us as well. So,
well, just in case I missed it and I did miss it. So initially you're going to do that with a ball out. Yes, out yep. There's not a decoy out there. Nope. So it's a lower value reward out there. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And depending on the dog, some of these dogs, I think he likes them both equally. He's a nutcase. No, he just wants to put his teeth on something. So, but yeah, we're starting with as low as we can at first. Otherwise, I mean, a toy at least. Right. Something that's still in drive, but teaching them to think and drive also.
Right.
To where they have to listen. They have to stay clear headed and that they don't just get to be nutcases at the end of the leash. So, once we start switching that up, so it's a recall, it's a down sometimes, things like that. As soon as we've got that really good with the ball, we bring the decoy out. Now we try to do that in the same day. So I won't go the next day and then go straight into a decoy. If I haven't done the decoy, then the day before we'll do the ball again. That way they understand we're asking them. Then we put the decoy out in front of them and do the same thing. So
what I saw you doing, though, that was a little bit of a twist that I liked is that you were bringing the decoy to the dog.
Yes.
In that video.
So when we like very quiet, very stable dogs, I don't want my current dog. I don't know. I can barely ever get him to bark at all, but we don't want him. We want him to shut up and just be as calm and as stable as can be as much as we can have them in that state of mind. So with that. And we need a good decoy for this to pay attention to the body language of the dog because I hate waving them and stopping them and making them go backwards. So usually the dogs go a little crazy at first. They're like wanting to bark. You know, you're telling them down, they kind of go crazy. And they're like, wait a minute, we were just doing this. So they'll finally lay down. And as soon as they lay down and they're stable
and quiet,
the decoy has to immediately start walking towards the dog in that position. The first couple times you'll see him kind of break for a second, like, oh, he's walking towards me. No want to stand back up. Decoy has to stop immediately. If they start barking, decoy walks away. So he doesn't get it for being yappy or for standing up. He has to be laying down, quiet, calm, in order for that decoy to basically come give him room service where he's at.
Right. I like that idea, the room service idea.
Yep. So at first, what we'll do is it's always going to be the decoy feeding the bite. At the beginning, then we start burying that later on. But
right.
So decoy comes back, feeds him there. And then if we've got the verbal out, then we'll almost always do verbal outs So once we have that, then we'll verbal out them and just rinse and repeat until we get a whole bunch of reps.
Do you vary it up with some straight sends as well?
Yes.
So you get that continuous.
And where they're at. So sometimes it relates to them being right next to you as well. So we'll put them right next to us. Nope, you got to be clear. You got to be calm. You got to be quiet. And the deco will come right in and feed the bite. So
what's your word for that?
Proprioception.
Yeah, I don't know. Proprioception.
That's too big a word.
It is a big word.
It's a big word.
But if Ken Zickletter could say it, anybody could say it.
What's that word again? What's that big word? I'm a little slow sometimes. So, yeah, we try to bury, you know, if they're running out 10 feet, they're running out 30 feet, 20 feet, and we're burying that the entire time as well. But as soon as we see that dog lay down on his own and anticipate, we know that he is understanding that game. And I like that. So then immediately we're let go. And if they don't go, I'll just have decoy run and drive him out of that without us. Cause I don't want him relying on us to, I already told you to, you know, go bite once. I don't need to tell you 10 times to go bite. So they pick that up pretty quick. They're like, oh, now I don't know if I'm going, if I'm laying down, and we start doing that. So once we've got that super stable on the down halfway, now we go to our recall. And sometimes it depends on if they have a good heel position at that time. We'll go with the here. And then we have somebody else running the long line that basically helps pull them into a heel position because they're trying to break. They're not understanding this part yet because now there's a decoy and we just changed the picture again. So we're super fair to them. But once we get them back into the heel position, which I'd rather have before we do this too, but it doesn't always happen with a great one. But this will solidify that heel position very, very fast because they want that decoy and they're starting to understand that stability gets them paid. And now they're going to understand that stability gets them paid next to dad too. So we get them either in a sit or a down next to the handler and same thing, room service. Decoy walks all the way back to you and sucks when it's a hot day because decoy's running back and forth on the
floor. And he's basically walking backwards.
It depends. Usually at first it's walking backwards and then just feeding them a tricep. But
yeah,
it also depends on the decoys, how they feel about catching frontals and, you know, doing things like that. So sometimes if they walk forward back to them, the spin will make them break.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, yeah.
So just back up just a second, just for listeners. And when you said you described, we want the dog to be stable. What are you looking for when you say stable? To kind of define what you mean by stable.
I want them ready to go. So they think that they can launch at any minute. Like they're paying attention to the decoy and things like that. But for us, stability is quiet. It's calm. I don't care if they're
focused.
They're kind of like just on the edge of their cup running over a little bit.
I'm going to throw this term out, your favorite term, Rich. They're capped.
Oh, my God.
Their drive is capped.
Oh, my God.
Is that a pet peeve of yours?
It's his. It's not mine. It's his. But that is what it is, right? They're harnessing.
Yeah, it's called obedience, Howard. It's called obedience. Okay.
All right.
It is, but some people's obedience isn't as good as the others, right?
Right.
So yeah, we like them quiet. We want them to not be bouncing around. They want to stay in that. If it's the sit position, if it's the down position, stay there. You don't get to inch forward. If you inch forward, we're just pulling you right back. Usually that's on a harness at first. And once they understand it more, then we'll start layering a little bit more correction. But we try to be as fair as we can to the dogs. We don't want to beat you up for something that you don't know. We're going to show you. And through repetition, and this does, it happens fast, but we're going to help you along. And then when I know you know it, now it's, I've told you to do it, you're going to do it. And even those corrections are still fair, but now we're going to start layering corrections on top of that.
Does that also help you guys if you vary the distance of the decoy? Say you have a dog that's a little harder to control or to cap for Howard, that you push the decoy out a little further, get a little more control, and then bring them closer. You know what I'm talking about?
Does it help with which portion?
So, you know, so you had a dog that's got a lot of drive that wants to go bite the decoy, right? So sometimes if you increase that distance of the decoy over your, you know, whatever the distraction is, right? Further away, a little easier it is to control.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Sometimes that helps. And it's weird. Sometimes closer helps. It really depends on the dog and you got to play with it. Sometimes they're too far away and they go, it puts them into.
Takes them too long to get back and they start.
They get mad. They start getting a little crazy.
Messes with the process.
Yeah. Sometimes being really close, they're like, "Well, I'm close." Who was it? Was it Eric Good talking? in one of these courses and hits, he does that bark fence stuff. And he's saying, when you get really close, they go into prey and they should lock up and not be going crazy and should be kind of stalking their prey. And sometimes being closer will make them shut up and be a little bit more like, I know I'm kind of showing you, but
no, it's the same old analogy that people use with the rabbit. You know, the rabbit, the dog is going to get quiet before he actually strikes the rabbit. He's not going to announce that he's coming.
Yeah. I like too, is it just it the heel and the, you know, the final position and stuff. It just relates to other things, and you know, during obedience and things like that. Cause they just, I remember if I'm close to dad, I'm quiet, focused, I get to go forward. I got to go do something else. So it just relates to many other things. Well,
one of the things that strikes me that I'm hearing is that I see this fall apart in a lot of exercises is that what is the behavior that gets me paid? And sometimes that's that thing that's close enough. So the dog is not really in a heel position. He's come back and he's kind of in the heel position or he's kind of in a down, but he might be 3-4 feet out in front of you or 3-4 feet off the side of you. Yep. And So what is not being grasped by people is that the dog is very quickly learning that that's the behavior that's getting me what I want. Yeah. And then they ask themselves, well, why does he keep doing that? Well, you keep rewarding him for it.
You gave him an inch and he took a mile.
Yep.
They will use everything to their advantage to get what they want. We all know that, right? So that's why we have to hold them accountable. And like I said, it's fair at first we try to be fair the entire time, but it's fair with, we're not trying to beat them in the submission into a certain place. We're just pulling them over with the leash and telling you, if you pull back out, nope, that decoy will stop. And that's why you need the decoy paying attention on the same page. We'll pull you back into position. Then decoy starts walking. They go, oh, so I have to be right here or he's not coming to me.
Mm, yeah.
So, or he may go the other way.
Okay. Yep. So I see the significance of that.
That's it's funny how they picked that up. We just went and selected 4 dogs at the beginning of last year. And one of them that went to his agency, 3 went to mine. And the one that went to his was very susceptible to be a very loud mouth dog that would, his cup would runneth over. Right. Mm-hmm. And he would lose his mind. And then one bite session, we put him on a bungee and I made him stay there. I said, you can't release him until he's quiet. And I would just stand there. He's going crazy. And we just waited him out. And then finally he kind of tired himself out a little bit. And as soon as he got quiet, he gave him the bite command. I took a bite. We let him have a long bite. It wasn't like a 10-second bite. We let him have probably like a 4-minute bite and then took him out, brought him back in. That time he's like super quiet laying on the ground. Okay.
Learned real quick.
Yeah. It doesn't take long for them to understand that behavior gets them paid. And I know like Justin Brigham is huge on let it be their idea. And we agree with that. If they come up with it on their own, as opposed to us staying quiet or anything else, then they're more apt to do it and continually do it is what it seems like we're seeing out of these dogs.
Sure.
So
self-discovery is a wonderful thing.
More apt to show up again. That's what
it is. Yes, exactly. So they're doing it. They're staying quiet. They're not barking. And then what's funny is we go do building searches. I'm like, please God, bark. And they're like, you've been telling me to be quiet this whole time. So always problem solving something.
Well, it's that way with dogs, period, right? It's always something. You know, you get one thing right. And then the next thing you start on the next thing. And it's an ever involved, revolving door.
Oh yeah. It never ends. That's for sure. It never ends. So, but I guess in a nutshell, that's our process. I mean, there's a lot more we can go into. We've got a bunch of videos on it, probably from start to finish that, you know, we could share with you guys and anybody else that wants to see it. But it's interesting to see how quickly it actually happens, especially when they're realizing that they are making the decisions, which is getting them what they want. So, and they're figuring it out. So
nice. Very cool.
Yeah. There's another thing I wanted to talk with you guys about, cause I'm kind of seeing this, we are seeing these issues all around the country. I think it showed, one of the videos showed up in a legal class just now that we were in, things like that. And it's people, you okay? We talk about tactics for a minute, Rich?
Sure.
It's one of his favorite subjects.
Oh man, some of this stuff drives me up the wall.
I watched a bunch of videos just the other day thinking what, I have no idea what they're trying to accomplish by teaching these officers not to clear up to the dog, but hey, whatever. You know, go ahead.
Oh yeah. There, yeah. We, we can go down rabbit holes on this stuff for sure. Specifically, though, what seems to be happening a lot, I'm going to talk about just with vehicles, not like exterior searches, you know, tracks and building searches or anything else. But with high-risk vehicle stops, it seems like either one, officers are rushing cars, or handlers are getting too fast to deploy their dog, getting their dogs either shot or killed by the police or the suspect. Or once they send the dog, then they chase that little brown hole and putting themselves in a position of disadvantage to lose a gunfight. It's just insane to me. So a long time ago in Florida, we were doing a lot of stuff in narcotics, a lot of crazy vehicle pinches, a lot of things like that. And we had some really good supervisors come in and they're like, hey, you know, stop doing this. We don't have armor in our doors like LAPD does, right? So why are we trying to use a car door to stop bullets that does not stop bullets? So we started using our vehicles. So we'd bail out and we'd go behind our vehicles and use the pillars to do all of our fighting from, I guess is what we could say, and control everything from there. So there's a guy, he owns Centrifuge. He does these vehicle CQB classes around the country, and it's absolutely amazing. He talks about this stuff better than anybody I've ever seen when it comes to fighting around a car and using the car's cover and everything else. But he's, you know, he makes some really good points that the auto industry spends like billions of dollars to make these cars as safe as possible. And the result of that is the pillars stop bullets. And we have shot a lot of rounds in the pillars and they stop a lot of rounds. Your engine block, everybody gets behind, you know, not everybody. Some people are doing it differently, but a lot of people are still using engine blocks and wheels, and those things they're not going to stop a bullet. So most of those engine blocks have so much dead space in them, and you're usually using the corner of your vehicle anyways when you're trying to get your dog to see what's going on. And that whole corner section is not going to stop a single bullet. So why are we fighting from that position when we're trying to use our cover? So things that we do is if you come out and you join the vehicle pursuit with us or a high-risk vehicle stop, all the agencies, especially in my immediate area, you won't see one of them rush a car. You'll see everybody bail out, get behind their cars. They start doing the high-risk stop from there. If a guy runs, that's what you get the dog for. So let the dog go be the one that chases this guy down so that you don't have to expose yourself to the car for no reason. So we'll come out, we'll call them out from there. And, you know, we use a whole bunch of other tools. You know, patrol, we're allowed to use some forms of gas and things like that. We've got drones we'll check cars with, and we'll take our time on things like that. We're not rushing guys to get them out of cars because it's going to be a very hard gunfight to win.
Well, I think you just said it, man. You know, you don't have to be in a hurry at that point. If there's nobody in that car that's getting killed, he's not hurting anybody else. You have now surrounded that car. You've got all day. You do not have to be in a hurry to get up to that car to get somebody out of it.
Correct.
There's no reason to expose yourself. There's no reason. You know, it's like when you send your dog up there, it's just like I said, hey, oh, Howard, you go first. I'll be right behind you. You don't do that. So you just send your dog in there to get killed for no reason. You gain no tactical advantage. You're exposing yourself. You're exposing your dog. You don't have to be in a hurry. There's no dope. There's no money. There's nothing that's worth getting an officer hurt or your dog killed to gain no tactical advantage.
Correct. Now, if it's time to go, like we're both of our agencies, we're big on paws before boots on almost everything. If we've got to go in, and I know I've heard some people say, well, you know, a gun call is not a dog call. Well, I've buried friends and I'd much rather bury my dog. So I don't want to be at a funeral watching my friend's wife and their kids cry as they lower them into the ground. I'd rather never see that ever again. So,
well, you go back to that whole thing. You have to gain something from what you're about to do.
Yes.
That's what you're talking about.
Yeah. We're talking everything else has failed, right?
Yes.
Everything's failed. Now we've got to put boots into wherever we're going. Whatever that is, the dog's going to go ahead of us.
Sure.
So one last thing on that real quick, and then I'll bring something up for Brian. He's one of the things that I saw immediately when I promoted. We had a whole bunch of high-risk vehicle stops in a row. You know, felony stops, whatever anybody wants to call them. So we realized that the whole hokey pokey dance was putting us in a really bad position. And it's hard to train out of people because they've been doing it for years. You know, I still say things that I've been saying for years that we probably shouldn't say anymore. Like probably let me see your hands. I'd rather say don't move. Anything other than that, it's noncompliance, right? So, instead of having them lift their shirts and things like that and turn around, what we're seeing is every time we ask them to lift their shirt, they're not lifting it the way that we're asking them. Most guns are going to be inside the waistband or on their hip, right? So if it's in that position and they have to put their hands near there to lift their shirt in order to show you that they either do or don't have a gun. And if they do have a gun, now they just put their hand and maybe they're just trying to comply and you might shoot them for compliance. And that's a tough position to put a suspect in that may have just been complying. So we'll ask them. We'll ask them if they're armed. And if they are, we tell them, don't touch anything. Just keep your hands, you know, on the back of your head or up in the air. And anything other than that is non-compliance. We're going to hit you with 40s. We're going to hit you with less lethal beanbags and whatever else. Or if you go for the gun, you know, God forbid, then you get shot. So we don't want them to be in that position. We'd rather control that situation. So we keep their hands up. We don't do the whole walk backwards anymore because I don't know how often you walk backwards, but I don't walk backwards very, very well. I'm going to trip all over myself. So, and we want them to see the show of force. We want them to see the 7 to 10 cops pointing guns or less lethal tools and a dog in their direction and realize that this isn't going to work out for them. The other part of that is if they're walking backwards and they put their hand towards a gun that's in their waistband, you're not going to know that there's a gun in his waistband and that's what he's pulling out until he is turned around and punched out on you already, which now you're very far behind that OODA loop. But if he's walking towards you and he puts his hand towards the gun, you're going to see the gun as it's coming out of the waistband instead of when it's already pointed at you. So we want to be ahead of that curve because our OODA loop's already slow enough. You know, we're not like these dogs that have these extremely fast OODA loops. We're a little bit slower. So we do that. We bring them all the way back to us behind the cars, and that's where we go hands-on with two people. We got guns on them. We've got less lethal on them, and we take them into custody. And if they have a gun on them, we take it off of them right there. So cool. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I don't have enough. I mean, I like what you're saying, like I'd like to see the numbers behind it, you know, so tactics are always like this, you know, what's the number saying? Are we having a decrease in incidents using those tactics? And if we are, then obviously that's a great tactic. I mean, it sounds good to me. I like the thought process behind it, but you know, I've been out of law enforcement for 11 years. So as far as looking at, you know, what's the numbers say, what's the increase in incidents? Is it decreased things or is it things are increasing? And that's, I think you got to look at numbers before you know if it's successful or not.
Hey, folks, we're proud to have Hold the Line Canine Conference as a supporter and sponsor of the Working Dog Depot podcast. Joe Lukowski and staff are already securing vendors and presenters for the seminar in April. That's April 9th, 10th, and 11th in a brand new location. That's right, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. We are especially excited about that. It's going to cut our travel time in half. And there's nothing like being in the Carolinas in early April. Let's Hold the Line Canine Conference. We're very much looking forward to being there and hope to see you all there. Thank you.
Yep, that makes sense. We're not a crazy city. We're not like, you know, my old agency in Florida where there was a lot more shootings. We're probably doing one or two a year, officer involved shootings. But for us, we're getting a lot more compliance and a lot less confusion from suspects doing it this way.
There you go. And that's what I'm asking. So that's decreasing potential problems, right? Because if that's what they're saying, they're not as confused. They understand. You can see. But if everybody feels more comfortable about it, then obviously it's going to be a good tactic.
Years ago, we ended up having a patrol ends up getting a guy, and they weren't 100% sure if he snuck out the back or not, but they thought they had containment. Surround the house, turns into kind of a SWAT call thing. They start working it, end up getting a female out who confirms that he's probably in the house, but she's playing games with us still, and we're not 100% on if he made it out or not. So anyway, hours and hours go by, and you know, we gas the house, we break the windows out and do all that stuff that SWAT does, and get to the point, stuck a robot in there. Of course, they got hung up on some pantyhose and tried the drones and all that kind of stuff, but none of us worked. So we got into a portion where we had to make entry, had bad gas masks, by the way, that which is another story, but they failed. they called for the dog. We ended up clearing the upstairs with the dog, did a real good job. And I'll get to this a little bit later about component training and how important things are. But so under mass, he's been with me in a mask and training. He's been in gas. He's been in sticky houses and stuff like that, all places we trained venue-wise. So he did real fine on the upstairs. Cleared up aisle area, pulled him back down, threw some more gas in. It was like a tri-level house, so I had like a 3, 4, 5 sit down into a basement area and then a crawl space that was tucked back underneath there. So sent the dog into that, cleared the lower part of the trial level, which was a living room, a bathroom, and a laundry room. So called him back up. Still haven't found the guy. So everyone's kind of starting to think, maybe guy got out. So guys outside, we're with female, got some good intel from her. She says, hey, if he's anywhere, he's in the crawl space. So they started looking at the crawl space, which we're going to get to at some point, but it was one of those houses where you go into the bedroom and clothes are, 6 feet high and stuff like that. So we wanted to clear all that stuff first. So we're kind of going that route and started pulling stuff back, crawl space. And we noticed that the carpet had a little indentation that we could see now. So it had been moved. So we're pretty certain that we felt pretty good in there. And there was probably some tactical issues on this. We ended up not gassing inside that in the crawl space, called for the dog. And we went up and sent the dog in, and all I could see was it was a floor-fed wall, if that makes sense, into the crawl space. So it wasn't a drop down, it was just into a wall crawl space.
Right.
And we're all under masks, it's dark out. All I could see is that he was going in there and he was barking around the entrance of the crawl space. And then he would turn left and he would jump up on something. So I could see him, he was upright. And he would bark, but he would not go any deeper. So my first thought was that this is just some kind of small little concrete crawl space. There's nothing to it. So called the dog back out. Team leader says, hey, what do you think? I said, well, he's barking, but he's not going deep, and he's not obviously engaging anything, so I'm not quite sure what's going on. I'd like to try to resend him. So do that, resend him back in, same thing. Barks at the hole, right at the entrance. Jumps back up, doesn't go deep. So we end up pulling it out. I go upstairs. They're going to start clearing. I think we should have probably gassed it or maybe even smoked it. But entry guys went in. I was on the top of the stairs. Guys start shooting through the floor. I get hit in the arm as they're calling for the dog because now they're in engagement, and they end up getting in a gun battle with him in the crawl space. So it was a tough lesson because I felt that we had covered every aspect of that. We've done the gas, we've done gas masks, we've done gunfire, we've done crawl spaces. So I wasn't quite sure until later when I got to go into the house and look around that what it was is just a bunch of suitcases. And then there was the furnace that he was jumping on. The guy was actually behind the furnace. And for whatever reason, the dog just wouldn't push deep like over the suitcases. So that was one of the things that came out of that for us was that, we need to work some. We thought we had covered every component that we could run into on a SWAT deployment. Well, here's a simple one of into a crawl space and jump over some suitcases to get to the bad guy,
So, yeah, but it's never simple. So what was the light level in the crawl space? Was it
pitch black?
Yeah. So, some things that we found when I was working some military stuff that, dogs, when it's pitch black, they see a void. So he could have seen that as a wall. And so I can't get over that anyway, right? So that's completely not on the dog, not on you. That's just it's elements that we run across, and so we used to put a little red light on the dog's collar, so we give him some ambient light, so we could hit that, and then he could kind of see what he was looking at, and sometimes that helps. Obviously there's give and take with that. Now they also see your dog, right? So, but it's not like they don't know the dogs there already.
Yeah. He was sure we're there. Yeah, we thought about throwing a chem light in there or something like that. That's all kind of afterthought, obviously. But
of course it is.
Not knowing what you're looking at, it was interesting that the confidence I had in my dog and going through all the different levels of training with things. And at first it was a failure to me that he didn't push through, but then I realized it's more probably just a lack of training or an environmental issue.
Sure. Absolutely. And that's, lessons learned, right? Things that you've done differently. The main thing is
hard lessons.
I get shot in the arm. Yeah, I trip on the stairs. Dog engages my other arm. and then my gas mask gets knocked off. So I was like, this is a bad day as I'm laying on the floor and he's shooting through the floor.
Oh, yeah. but in the end, it all worked out, right?
All worked out. Yep.
Good.
So did you change some of your training as a result?
Yeah. Yeah. We, you know, I think as a trainer and even as a handler, you should just everything you can think of that you would run into, put your dog through and make it a success in some way. You know, I mean, that, I mean, whatever it is, you know, not just the simple stuff where he can sit next to me and I can shoot at the range. That's not enough. You know, you got to put it in scenario type things. You got to put them in just whatever you can think of. We used to never do water bites until we had three fines in a lake. And I'm like, we probably should start doing this stuff. You know, we're starting to find a lot of people in water for some reason.
Yeah.
So just, that's all Billy and I, you know, really concentrate on is some goofy ass scenario that may never apply, but some part of that, that dog might relate to in a scenario, in a real life incident.
Yeah. It's funny. We had a situation in Shelby that you guys, you're probably both old enough to remember, but we would have to go back and look at some of the footage. It was back when the term suicide by cop was just really beginning to emerge across the country. And we had a gentleman show up at the police department, and I happened to be there that afternoon. And he drew down on a couple of administrators, a couple captains out in the parking lot. And they managed to get themselves into the building and away from him. But he was out in the street in an alley with his gun, and he was threatening to kill himself, kill other people. And multiple agencies converged on the scene. And I had a young handler at the time that got his dog out, but he had the forethought to understand that this is not my dog's not going to save the day. This is not a dog call. And he just is really an intelligent young man. He's now retired. That shows you how old, but how long ago it was too. So this was in the late 90s, I believe. And he had a captain at one point that was screaming at him, send your dog, send your dog, send your dog. And he held fast, didn't send his dog because he knew. And when the end result was unfortunate, he got shot. The guy was shot and killed because he eventually did draw. But this was a pretty long, drawn-out thing. It was captured by multiple news sources, and it's been – we could probably find it if we Googled it. And so it was really an unfortunate situation, but he just – it was just amazing to me that he – had the forethought to understand that that was not, the dog is not always the answer. It wasn't going to fix that situation. In fact, it would have caused something probably worse to happen. The end result would not have changed, and more people probably would have been hurt or possibly killed. So we replicated that. So you know, one of the underlying rules is that you don't ever want to do anything that with a dog that you're not ever trained. And obviously you can't train for every situation, but we kind of wanted to see what would happen. Here's this female Malinois that was a real hard charger that would knock you off your feet if you were at a distance. And I thought, well, let's see what happens if I'm out on my hands and knees in a bite suit and we send this dog. And you know what? It wasn't as cool as we thought it was. I didn't get knocked to the ground. Yeah. And it would have ended poorly. And I just thought that was an interesting situation. But it does change the way you think about training sometimes when something happens and you make adjustments. And really, probably a lot of our training, at least our scenario-based training, is based on incidents that have happened or things that could potentially happen.
Yeah. Well, and that's how you learn, though. You know, you have to go back. You see these incidents unfold that you weren't prepared for, or the outcome wasn't what we looked for. And we go back and we train those and train those and train those, and you get better over time, right? Because all of our great – I was listening to a great podcast today with the Mac V Sog guy from Vietnam, and that's what he was talking about. They would go out and they would run into something that they'd never seen before, you know, because they're making it up as they go, right? So, and they would go back and then they would train these things over and over again, and they would modify guns. Their M16s would get so hot, or their Car 15s would get so hot. So they would cut fore ends off other guns and put them in and have them put on, you know, just so they could handle their own guns. But they didn't know these things because of, you know, they never dealt with these sustained firefights like they were doing, you know, which is all interesting. So we have to learn from our mistakes, our failure, what we think is a failure. It's really not a failure.
No, we love them. When we find anything at all, or even on some of our successes that we have, we immediately come back because we're lucky enough that we get to train 10 hours every Wednesday. You know, there's a lot of agencies out there don't even get enough training to keep their dog.
Yeah.
Even on the street, in my opinion. But they, so we're training a lot. So we'll come up every Wednesday and be like, hey, we just had this. Let's run all the dogs through it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And we run them through and set it up as close to how it went down as possible. And then say, okay, dogs are ready for that one. Let's find another one. Yeah,
it's good stuff right there. Good for your agency though, giving you that time. That's really
we're lucky. In the
same boat.
Yeah, yeah, we train together every Wednesday. So yeah, we're 10 hours every Wednesday. So.
That's pretty much unheard of. I felt like we were one of the few places that got to train on a weekly basis. So
I think that, kudos there's to you. Quite a few in Colorado. Cool. That are like that. They're definitely the vast majority of the front range is training every week, and it shows. There's a lot of good dog teams in Colorado for sure. But when you got in that. After the shooting happened, since I was a little bit more real life, did you see any difference in the dog?
No, not really. I mean, he cut his paws and stuff like that. And, through some glass that we ended up stepping in after I got him off my arm, but not really. You know, it was just the only thing I could think of that we didn't train was duration of something. You know what I mean? It's like, how do you do that? And good Lord, that would take up your whole training day. If you did like a 9 hour,
3 hours,
or yeah, 4 hour. And he had, he heard the glass breaking. He heard the gas going off. He heard the bullhorn with the negotiators talking. So and that was just this prolonged aspect that definitely I've never trained that.
Yeah.
But he was put in that position because of where we were positioned. So don't know if that had anything to do with it. But after it was all said and done, no, he was still the same. He was.
You getting shot didn't have a big impact.
No, he's like, well, it's nice to be you. No, if you saw the social media, how's the dog doing?
I'm fine.
The dog's great. Yeah, and I'm doing well too.
It's interesting because I got into a shooting back in 2018, and the reason why I asked that is because I saw a big change in my dog on that one, like immediately afterwards, you know, in kind of a weird way. He's a monster anyways, but we, monster in a good way, not a bad way, but so I should have brought the dog on this, like attempt to locate on this guy. He had been basically raping his daughter for the last 12 years, videotaping everything else. And he purposely waited to try to kill whoever that cop was that was going to show up and arrest him. He knew we were coming. We didn't know that, but we learned that through the investigation. So we get there and go take him into custody. Of course, he tries to shoot me. It doesn't work out for him. Me and another officer shot, but where I parked so that I could pop my door just in case he ran instead of going down a different way. And so the dog watched the entire thing. And I get back there and he's just like pacing. And afterwards, so he would normally like lay down in the car and relax, even for a Malinois that's super high drive. If we weren't doing a whole lot, he'd just kind of lay back there and watch me. And after that, I could not get that Joker to sit down in the car. To everybody near the car was a threat. It was just, it was insane how he was just, yeah. He was like, let's go to war. I'm like, oh, buddy, it's calm down. It's just bicycles.
Well, you know, we know that dogs learn through association, right?
Yep.
And smart dogs pick it up a lot quicker.
Yeah.
We, not that we want this to become the shooting episode, but you guys, just your talking is making me think about the situation that we had in 2016 when Tim was shot. And I was called in the middle of the night to come secure the dog. And I thought, holy smokes, if he's out loose, then somebody's having a bad day because that dog was going to mess somebody up. And when I got there and was able to find his car, the good news was that the dog was in the back of the car. Good news from the standpoint that I didn't have to go wrangle him up and get him. The other part of that is that, you know, that we've all armchair quarterbacked that situation to death. And we kind of feel like that things would have turned out differently if he had his dog with him, you know, and all the emotions around that. But he was the kind of dog that we stopped petting as a group a long time ago because he kind of let us know that we just weren't welcome to pet him. So the thought of getting him and securing him, but then what I realized is that I had to get that dog out of that car because the FBI wanted to process it. And I thought, oh my gosh, how am I going to get this dog out of this car? But fortunately, he'd been in there a long time and he was asleep. And the best plan I had was reach in there like he was mine and hook him up and walk him out.
Let's go.
And that, you know what? That's the one that worked. Yeah. So thank goodness.
That's awesome. Yeah,
it's interesting you say that because we now, with all of our dogs very early on for reasons like that and other things, also for just stability around backup officers and everything else. Well, like I'll have handlers go grab other dogs.
Oh, that's awesome.
I have them go grab mine and things like that. And I'm like, let's get them. It's because we don't want to deal with that issue if it ever comes up.
It's really forward thinking, I think.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It makes a huge difference because they're just like, oh, it's just another guy in uniform. Let's go. Instead of being nasty there.
But I think there's an element of there are folks out there, there are handlers out there that are, I don't want to say they're prideful, but they want to believe that that dog is their dog alone.
Yeah.
And you know what? It doesn't diminish anything if that dog can be handled by other officers, other people.
Absolutely.
It doesn't take anything away from the dog.
They do not care. It's funny. I'm like, they'll forget about you. I took a handler or a dog from a handler recently and he was upset, and he it's not because he did anything bad. He was a great handler. I love him to death, but sorry, I'm missing your wedding if you're going to listen to this. So he goes to another agency. He's got a new dog now right now. And you know, I just gave that dog to another handler, but he leaves and she just didn't skip a beat. And then gave her to him and she goes, bye.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm gonna go work for this guy now.
So
we do a lot of integration stuff and a lot of team movement, things like that when we're teaching. So our SWAT teams will run our dogs with us. So they'll call them up, send them into rooms, things like that.
Smart.
And it's interesting because I have heard that. I've heard a lot of handlers that are like, well, you know, it's gonna do this, they're not gonna do this. My dog engages. All of their dogs engage. All of my dogs engage people. We don't have that issue. They understand who they're supposed to bite, who they're not supposed to bite, and they don't care. They're just like, if you're in uniform, you're on my team. And if we find somebody else in this house that is not the same as the other, they're getting bit.
Mm-hmm.
And we have what happened.
It just goes to show you, man, you know, if a handler could get tied up in a room if you're searching something.
Yes.
The dog comes out of the room if he's clearing ahead of you. And then the last person or the first person to see them again, another officer that can redirect the dog down the hallway, keeps everybody safe. The dog just keeps pushing, you know, and that's great tactics and great use of your resources.
So get out ahead of us, make sure we're not going to get ambushed and try to locate this person. And
you got smoked on a building search, didn't you?
What's that?
You got smoked on a building search.
Yeah. When an officer sent his dog on me. Yes. I have a great. It's funny because I had just redirected that dog down the hallway.
Yeah.
Went into the room and the officer was just trying to sent him back down the hallway, and when he did, he pointed right at me, and the dog said, okay. He said, find him, and there you go. There he was. And
it happened. There he is, right in the hallway.
Yeah.
What he was trained to do. It was great for me. But
when I first got promoted, I've been a fellow sergeant with one of my old dog that I retired, and he was so good, but the two of them had some kind of conflict. He ran past four cops. And this guy was yelling something, and you could tell he like recognized his voice. He goes, and boom, just hammered his leg. I'm like, no. And he's awesome. He's now our assistant chief and one of my or in our department. But he just turns around and he goes, that's going to be a steak dinner. I said, yeah, oh, you steak dinner. Sorry. We went on to find the bad guy too, hidden in the closet. So,
all right. So we've gone on about an hour. Nice. And, I think these guys have been a great interview. It's been fun. Been fun for me. We've shared a mic on this end, which we're not accustomed to doing. And
well, so for those that can't see the video like I can, a hotel room, and there might be some questionable activity going on here.
Don't judge us.
No judgment. Might be a little jealous. All I'm saying.
Oh, man.
Cool. All right. What's you said your company's name? Bellator Canine. We'll put this in the show notes too, but give the listeners a way to contact you guys if they want to learn more about you.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got we're on Instagram. It's Bellator_canine. We're on Facebook as Bellator Canine. You can email us at info@bellatorcanine.com, and you know, obviously that'll come straight to us. A lot of people hit me up on Messenger too. A lot, Billy Sawyer,
mm-hmm.
Billy Sawyer Canine on Instagram, and you can find me on there. Brian, what's your name on Instagram? Be Westy Dog. He's the tech guy.
Just go to Bellator.
Well, here you go. Good.
Billy will figure it out.
Well, tonight, Howard, since this is the first time we've had guests with us, or you're having guests, so I think we should include them on the bourbon test.
Absolutely.
You guys mind if we give a couple little shout outs to a couple people that are doing some good things out there in the.
Of course.
One of them being, I don't know if you guys know Ben Rader with Rader Canine. He does all the dominant dog collars.
I know Ben
very well. Leashes. God, Ben's a great guy.
Good guy.
He'll be out there, AT Canine, with us. We're teaching next month. Brady Smith, he's doing the Canine Medical stuff. He is awesome. we incorporate his stuff in our SWAT courses that we do. But another one real quick is A-Rod with Oro Canine Services.
We've had him on the podcast.
Yeah, he's an awesome guy, man. That's a hard worker. He was out there with the group guys for a while. And man, he'd get in the suit, get beat up. He'd come out to our course and jump in the suit for us and get beat up. He's just
great guy.
He's an amazing guy.
We haven't interviewed Brady. I know Brady, and I've worked with Brady.
Yep.
Did a seminar with him in North Carolina last year at Jim O'Brien's place. And I've known of Ben, and I've communicated with Ben. I've talked to Ben. Actually found a car that I was interested in Colorado Springs. And quick little funny story, ended up being a straight drive. And I had another guy lined up to go drive it, and he kind of balked on me because it was a stick shift car. And so I contacted Ben. So Ben went out and drove it, and he videoed the whole thing for me.
Oh, that's what he's telling me about. He told me about that.
I mean, he got under the car. It was great. So we've become pretty good friends, and we've communicated. So
well, how come they haven't been on the show yet, Howard?
Well, I tell you, Ben is on the list. We're waiting for him to be completely retired.
It's coming. He's almost done.
So when he's fully retired, he's like top of the list.
He is one of the best guys I've ever met. He will do anything. Like you just saw, right?
Yeah. It's funny. He'll do anything for you. Funny story. He's out in rural Montana, and this is, and you probably know the story better than I do. So I was asking him about the population. It's a very, very small, like stupid number, like 20 people in this town. And I said, well, I'm sure you know everybody. He said, well, I kind of do, but it doesn't help that my mother-in-law has told everybody that I'm the Punisher. So he kind of looks the part too. Yeah, so, you know, he's like, geez.
Yeah, he got tough. He does look good. I'm like, I don't really want to fight you, man. Let's just stay friends. Let's stay on the same side.
He's like a live action G.I. Joe.
He's a great guy.
Cool.
But three more names real quick. Just Marlon, Jack, Andy.
Yep.
Those guys are
– love you guys.
These guys have helped us out in a lot of different ways. I can't say the rest of their names.
That's awesome.
Good dudes.
Well, it's good to shout props out to good folks in the industry, man. Not enough of that is done.
No, yeah. There's a lot of good people out there doing a lot of good things that care about what they're doing, and mm-hmm. you know, it's nice to see when people are bending over backwards to help each other out.
Makes things better.
We got to make our dogs better. We got to make each other better. And
well, so as far as the benchmark, it's the low end Buffalo Trace, right? Pretty much.
But, yeah, but it comes from the same place. So you know, how bad can it be?
Well, exactly right. It's not as old.
It's not so as old.
It would be an 8-year-old Buffalo Trace, maybe a 6-year, whereas a Buffalo Trace might be an 8-year and an Eagle Rare would be a 10-year.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know how I feel about the Buffalo Trace. They sold their soul to the devil, for sure, because there's nothing they put out that's not delicious.
All right, I agree.
Well, gentlemen, we always end our podcast with, here's to the hair of the dog that bit you. So, cheers.
Cheers.
Hope you guys have a great night.
Thanks for having us, sir.
Great week there.
It was nice to meet you, too.
Thanks so much, you guys, for following along, supporting us, and listening to these wonderful conversations that Howard and I are just blessed to have each and every day. We'd like to thank and support all of our first responders, police, fire, EMS, and our military for once again holding the line, keeping us safe. Stay safe, brothers and sisters. We love you. God bless, and God bless America.